It's the Score North Twin Show.
All right, extra innings with Declan Goff here on the Score North Twin Show. I'm joined by AJ Fredrickson. The Minnesota Twins get back in the win column. Plenty of great stuff to get into today on today's show. Obviously, the offense finally wakes up. Excited to talk to AJ about that. But also, if this is the first time you're discovering this channel, this is the new Score North Twins YouTube channel that we've launched here in about a month. We have over 2,000 subs, which is great. And this is Extra Innings. This is a new concept that we're launching throughout the season, kind of led by myself and a rotating cast of characters at Score North. So if this is something you're interested in, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. There'll be pieces of content at every Twins home game, and then periodically on road games, I'll jump on here to do extra innings as well. So there'll be a whole new structure to the Score North Twins show, on top of obviously the main episodes with Mackie Judd and myself, and then Trevor Plouffe on Tuesdays. So we appreciate everyone for listening and liking the show. So let's get into it here, Age. I got four takeaways, four big ones as we circle the bases here. Number one is the Twins offense is alive. You know, I don't know if you do this, Age. I don't do this. I'm not a psychopath. I have a lot of faults. This is not one of them. The Twins offense seems like the kind of person who sets like the nine different alarms on their iPhone. And I know you wake up especially early, so I might be preaching to the choir here, but I don't do that. I set one alarm. And now, don't get me wrong, I still might snooze that once or twice. That still might be a thing that I do. But I will not set like eight different alarms. That's just not my thing. I don't like to do that. I don't know if the Twins offense does that, but thankfully I don't do that. What do you have your age for me?
Well, I have, this is my morning right here. 5:05, 5:10, 5:15, 5:20, 5:25. I have to do that. I have to do that because I know I need that constant reassurance of, hey, get your butt out of bed because you got to start the day. As much as I would love to just absolutely jump out, spring out, I understand maybe what the Twins are doing here because the alarm may need to go off sooner in the game because before we started here, I already brought it up to you. I feel like their offense is kicking in the second half of games more so, which is, it's not bad because the offense is there. Like you're seeing them put the bat on the ball and you look at some of the exit velos from today's game and they are getting the majority of those hard barreled balls, but I want to see it earlier, Dex. I want to see it a little earlier. That being said, it's nice to see that they're picking up on some of these relievers and a lot earlier than maybe the opposition is picking up on theirs. I know one of the key points coming into the season was if the Twins get in a bullpen game, you're going to feel pretty confident about it. They were able to go out, get a couple of guys to add. And I know they're missing their scorcher right now in Duran, but once he gets back, this bullpen is something to put pretty much toe to toe with a lot of other teams that are going to be atop divisions across the league. So it's nice to see that when they get to the bullpen, get past that starter, they're picking up on the relievers pitches out of the hand and they're putting some pretty good pieces on the ball.
Yeah, the offense today specifically, and they did some of this at least yesterday, they're working counts, they're getting guys on base, but yes, the lack of clutch hitting. And before the big inning there that took place, I believe, in the sixth, Carlos Santana was able to get a sac fly. The Twins were 0 for their last 17 with runners in scoring position over about a 23-inning sample, and yeah, just a couple games, but still 0 for 17. In 23 innings, I mean, you're almost getting a guy on every single time and scoring position at that rate, and you haven't been able to come through. And it looked like Byron Buxton was going to be the only one that could do it. He has four of the RBI. He's 3 for 3. He's been great with runners in scoring position. But it's finally Ryan Jeffers who ends up coming up, who's still searching for his first hit all year long. Parks a big-time home run just over the glove of Christian Yelich there, who reaches over. And the Twins obviously then take the big lead for good. But you're right. I mean, the second half, I guess you can look at the second half outburst in two different ways. Okay, they get stronger as the game goes on, so you know that even if they're maybe fighting things off a little bit, there's a little bit of life that comes after it. But you can't really squander going 0 for 6 and loading the bases two times in the first five innings. I do have a bone to pick with the Manuel Margot decision that I'll gladly get into later on this show. I'll probably wrap it with that because at first was going to be my – if they had lost this game, and they weren't able to scratch across, that would have been the number one talker. I'm actually going to bury that a little bit because other things I noticed that I want to get to. But yeah, the lineup as a whole, you definitely want to see them jump on starters a little bit more. You want to see them scratch across those runs early because you can't really just be a team that always has to be relied upon in the last, you know, four innings to get the job done. So, yeah, I would like to see more structure there at the start. But hopefully, you know, as they work more counts, as they take more pitches, they walked a ton today. Hopefully that just then results in obviously more clutch hits with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, I mean, and that too, like, this is where it's nice to have a guy like Carlos Correa, apparently fully healthy, Byron Buxton, apparently fully healthy, not just for what we can see in the defensive aspect, because that basket catch was a thing of beauty by Correa late in the game. But if you look at it, 4 for 15, runners in scoring position, 11 guys left on base. 11 guys. So 4 for 15 is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. It's about average. But when it comes to the runners left on base, I mean, that's just so many extra guys. Like it's about spread. It's like spreading butter on bread. You can put all of your butter across, and sure, you know, it's fine. And frankly, you might want that, but there's some psychopaths that want that big bite of butter. And that's what the Twins seem to do at sometimes, because if you go hitless through the first four innings, but then you explode like they did in the sixth, or I believe it was the seventh inning, a couple guys on base, the big Jeffers homer to put them up. That's fine. Give me that big bite of butter, because then you're say that five times fast. Like that's when you're going to do the damage. That's when you're going to, instead of doing these like little pops in the hot air balloon, take a whole chunk out, remove an entire patch. Cause then that opposition, that bullpen for the Brewers starts spiraling. And now you're putting the chessboard on that Brewers offensive side to where their batters got to wake up. I mean, they controlled a lot of that game, and all of a sudden you turn the table. Now they got their backs in the corner. You got to find a way to beat our bullpen, which, like I said, it's one of the better ones in the league. So it's nice to see them finally, despite a slow start, that seventh inning was massive for them.
Yeah. And that seventh inning, eight guys to the plate for the Twins, five runs, five hits, obviously the big one by Ryan Jeffers there, who was again, looking for his first hit of the season, kind of bust the game wide open, and they're able to go. I will get into some kind of the inverse of what you're talking about, where yes, the Twins in the second half are good, but on the pitching side, they got to get a little bit more out of their starters. I do want to touch on that in a little bit, but sticking on the offense for a minute, Alex Kirilloff dialed in to start the season. You know, it's actually strange. I thought of the lefty surplus that they have between Wallner and Julian and Kirilloff, that it would be Julian that kind of makes the easier transition, assuming health and assuming sophomore slumps won't exist for them. I thought it'd be Julian. It's actually been kind of flipped on me a little bit here. Alex Kirilloff looks great. I mean, 18 at-bats, 12 total bases. He's got an OPS over 1,000. He reached in five at-bats today. I mean, he was phenomenal. And you saw a guy there who was one of the better prospects in baseball, so it's not too shocking if he remains healthy that he can be this type of player. I've had big-time questions about him. Obviously, defensively, they basically replaced him with Carlos Santana. They basically said, we're going to take a really good defender, too, in Carlos Santana, and we're going to stick him at first base because we don't trust your glove. And if that means we have to DH you, which he played a little bit of left, he played left field today. But I'm pretty encouraged by him, because one of those guys had to step up and finally live up to their potential for 162. And so far, very small sample sizes, I totally get that. But through the first week of the season, Alex Kirilloff might be the most dialed in on anyone on this Twins lineup right now.
Yeah, and I think what you hinted at there was like, he's battled injuries, and if he can stay healthy, then who knows how good he can be. But that's the problem. Like, he's had those stints of injuries that he could be as hot as the sun, but if next week something happens, he takes a bad slide, and that would be the most Minnesota sports thing. It's like a guy that's red hot just goes into second base trying to stretch a single into a double, and all of a sudden something dislocates or something gets jammed, and who knows what happens, and kind of sets everything back. So the injury portion there is going to be big for him, but how, like you said, how good of a swing does he have? How good has he been putting the ball here on this early part of the season? Today was just a clinic. I mean, he was loving everything coming out of the pitcher's hands. And it comes down to pitch recognition. And it seems like he just is able to put the bat on the ball. Maybe it looks like he's not trying to murder it, but it ends up popping a little bit more than you would expect. Like, it's a very kind of nonchalant, smooth swing. But then, I mean, I think it was on that triple, he drives through it, and all of a sudden it sneaks past the center fielder, rolls to the deepest part of the ballpark, and he's got the wheels there to stretch that into what I think some guys who maybe with a little more of a hinder in their run, normally a double, he's able to turn the corner and get to third.
Yeah, I mean, not the like fleetest of foot in Alex Kirilloff. You definitely, I would say speed's part of his game, but to your point, heads up base running, right? I mean, Carlos Correa is not necessarily fast either, but that dude's got a heads up ability and knows where the heck when to turn on the jets and go. You know, Wallner got the day off today, and Wallner's been a little up and down still after a really rocky spring training. So he got the day off. In fact, he didn't even enter the game as a pinch hitter. But Julian, who was pulled in the fourth inning for that epic, weird exchange. You know what? Let's get into the Margot thing because I may as well. Yeah. I'm transitioning to it right now. So the Twins load the bases, and Milwaukee decides we're going to bring in a lefty. They got Julian and Kirilloff coming up. The Twins do, so probably should bring in your lefty, even though it might be a little early. They bring in the lefty, Milner, who the Twins saw yesterday. And after they bring in the pitcher, Rocco makes a change. He puts Manuel Margot, a right-hander who hits lefties very, very well, against it in his career. And Margot, on the first pitch, drops one down, drops a bunt down up the mound and on the third base side. Initially, he is ruled safe upon further review. He was out by just about a half a step. And I saw two conflicting things. Twins fans saying, how the hell did Rocco call for a bunt? And then also, why did Manuel Margot elect to a bunt? I don't care whose decision it is. If the bases are loaded and you have a righty on lefty situation and you're coming off the bench, and I know the Twins couldn't buy a run up until that point, there are better times to bunt. Why the hell are you bunting with the bases loaded? I don't care whose decision it was. If it was Rocco's or Manuel Margot's, who's a veteran, you can't be bunting with the bases loaded to try to scratch across one run. Best case, that scratches across one run. Swing away, Merrill. Take the bat and swing away. I don't want to see a pinch hitter coming in, even as a veteran as Margot, to go there and drop down a bunt, dude. Go swing away. I am not anti-bunt. I know a lot of people in today's baseball are now completely anti-bunt. Mm-hmm. I think there's a time and place to bunt. Bunting with the bases loaded is shooting yourself in the foot. I have absolutely no idea why they tried to do that. Drove me nuts, AJ. Drove me absolutely nuts.
Yeah, that's like putting a slow song in the middle of an adrenaline-filled playlist. Like, you just killed the vibe, you killed the mood. I mean, how many times last year did we talk about kind of maybe the batting order's moving along, it's flowing, the water's good, and all of a sudden somebody just comes up and maybe they've been on a little bit of a bat streak, and it's like, why do you have him there? Why are they in that spot? This is the same thing where you elect to make the decision, and like you said, Margot hits the lefties well, but then you get him up there. Maybe it's like you're looking for trickery. You're looking to catch them off guard by surprise. And I understand that. And I get that. But that early in the game, you still have quite a bit of time. You are not desperate. This is not a life or death. We need a run. This is a time for you to maybe push your chips in. Let him swing away. If anything, swing a little harder, because the pond has so many ducks on it right now where you just got to put the ball in play, and based on the matchup there, it benefits the Twins. And you know what? It doesn't work out. I would much rather you swing on a swing and strike out than watch strike three go by. You know, at least show me that you tried. Don't drop it down. That you're, like you said, you're just kind of surrendering the out, like what in Moneyball, you pick it up, you throw it to first, you say thank you for the out, thank you so much for that one.
Yeah,
same thing right there. You don't need to drop a bunt down there. Let's think about this, Rocco. You made the move. There's no need to bluff. I don't care if you think you're playing poker. Still, push the chips in and let him swing away. That's what Manny Margot does there.
Yeah, I mean, Margot hits .281, .342, .420 slash against lefties, so he has a pretty good batting average. He gets on base against left-handers. I mean, even the worst case, right, he works a walk. That's going to be the same thing as dropping down a bunt. So I didn't get it. We're recording this, too, right after the game. I'm sure Rocco will address that. Maybe he'll actually not address it. I don't know. But it drove me crazy because I'm all for bunting, and I do think there's a time and place to do it. But, man, it just absolutely absolutely infuriated me. All right, let's get into the pitching side of things here. So, and before we do that, actually, before we get into the pitching side, a shout out to our friends, a new sponsor on the Score North Twin Show on the Extra Innings podcast here, Element Hotel in downtown Minneapolis. It's right next to Target Field. It's located on 5th Avenue and 6th Street there. It's right just a couple steps down from Target Field. They got a great rooftop. You can even see Target Field from it. They have complimentary breakfast. They have a 24-hour fitness center. You know, Element Hotel offers extended stay hotel rooms with premium amenities like signature heavenly beds, free Wi-Fi, and equipped kitchens. And if you're doing a little staycation, maybe you're coming down from the Northern Metro or maybe from northern parts of the state or anywhere, highly recommend stopping at Element Hotel. Tell them Score North sent you. We're really excited to have them on board here. Again, just steps away from all the great stuff in the North Loop and from Target Field, too. So shout out to our friends at Element Hotel. Let's get into the pitching sides here. I have a couple notes. So let's start with Chris Paddock, who was on the mound today. The sheriff, as they call him. And if the Twins aren't doing, I know they released like their initial promotions calendar. If they're not giving a 10-gallon hat away, like the sheriff was rocking in all of the promos, like you're missing out on a golden opportunity there.
Yes.
But Paddock, 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts on 82 pitches in his first MLB start in almost 2 years. 47 strikes on those 82 pitches. So he definitely battled a little bit, but just 6 swings and misses. What I noticed, age, big time fastball changeup mix. His changeup was his bread and butter when he was with the Padres and was effective coming up in the big leagues. And he threw it about evenly as his fastball, which goes at about 95, 96. But the curveball was erratic. He had that big one in the dirt that kind of moved the runners up for the Brewers. Decent showing, I guess. Like, I think that's probably putting it a little nicely, but decent showing in his first debut. But I think the thing that I'm concerned with here, and a lot of other Twins fans are either concerned with or saying you're overreacting, is you basically got 4 innings from Chris Paddock today, and then you got 4 innings from Louis Varlin yesterday. Even with an elite bullpen, which you touched on early on, and I do think with even the injuries that are here on the Twins bullpen, it's still pretty dang good. I'm going to need more than 4 and fly. I mean, 5 and fly is one thing, right? You cross your fingers on 5 and fly.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be having every, basically, that aren't starters that aren't Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan. You can't have 3 guys in your rotation just be 4 and fly guys. It's going to tax your bullpen. So, yes, it's just one series. We're overreacting. It's the first week of the season. Of course I'm going to overreact here. But I would like to see a little bit more length, and I would like to see these guys find themselves not in so much trouble like Paddock did with back-to-back 20-pitch innings to start his 2024 season.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my big questions for you here. Yesterday we saw Louis Varlin. I think he got up to, what, like 89, almost 90 pitches through 4 or 5, and today Chris Paddock, 82 through 4. Maybe the more concerning thing is that only about half of those pitches were strikes. I love a pitcher that attacks the zone. I want to see a pitcher have the mentality that, hey, I'm taking the batter on. And part of here could be the matchup too, because it's so early. Maybe this is just under the new regime, the post Craig Council era Milwaukee Brewers. Maybe they're a team that wants to just wear down the opposing pitcher. Just we're going to foul off. We're going to take pitches. We are going to be about as conservative as possible, except for some of our big guns, like a Rhys Hoskins, like a Christian Yelich. So that could be one of those things where we need an outing or two from Chris Paddock and Louis Varlin before we really make these determinations. But you're exactly right. You do need a little bit more from these guys. First times out, it could just be nerves. It could be, like you said, it's been a long hiatus for a guy like Chris Paddock to get that start in the MLB. So it could be one of those things, but come end of this month into early next month, you do need more consistent, more efficient early outings from a guy like Chris Paddock, because if you can get through that first inning, second inning, 20, 25 pitches, like very efficient, and you're inducing some ground balls so that these at-bats aren't, and every at-bat is, you know, a 3-2 count, a 2-2 with a couple fouled off. Just get out there on the mound and work. You've got such good defenders behind you. Correa at shortstop. You've got Buxton in center field, pretty much covering everything except for section 112. Go ahead and let some of these guys put the bat on the ball. Just stick to what works. And like you said, the curveball wasn't really working for him as much today. That could just be the rust. I know they had spring training, and spring training seems like it's getting longer and longer every year in my mind. So maybe that's just an excuse that I'm looking for right there for him. But I think too early bottom line here is to tell that you just don't have enough on Chris Paddock to make that determination of, I'm not pressing the panic button. I don't think really anybody is. as much as some people may be overreacting. Give him an outing, give him two more, and then we can really make a judgment call on Paddock and a guy like Garland.
Yeah, 82 pitches, I should say, for Chris Paddock today. 32 of them fastballs, 30 of them changeups. So, you know, well, more than two-thirds of his pitches today were from those two alone. And yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more mix there at the curve and slider. It was interesting that they brought, actually, and I don't hate it. At first I questioned it. Looking back on it now that I've sat on a little bit, I think it was the right move. But going Brock Stewart, Griffin, Jax, you know, to build in the seventh, eighth instead of the eighth, ninth. At first, I was like, well, what are they going to do for the ninth? And they bring out Steven Okert, and Okert dances around some little bit of trouble there. He had a tough time finding the strike zone. But I think with the insurance run and also the state of the lineup there, I mean, you need your firemen, bullpen arms, which are right now Brock Stewart, Griffin, Jax, to go out there and be like your 1-2 punch combo. And those guys are going to get a lot of innings. They haven't pitched a lot. They haven't pitched in this series up until that point. They hadn't pitched in Saturday, so they were well rested. They were ready to go. But now, obviously, the Twins coming back home, they have their home opener about 24 hours from now as we're recording this. So we'll see if how much their availability is factored into tomorrow. They did pitch back-to-back games, or games one and two, I really should say, because they had the built-in off day to start the season. So that part was fine. But in general, yeah, you're going to need Paddocks, you're going to need Louis Varland. I know Bailey Ober's start was just a complete gong show, and you're going to need him to step up too. But going to be an awfully long season if Pablo Lopez and Joe Ryan are really your only reliable guys. It's going to be pretty damn difficult if these guys are going to be not five and fly guys, but four and fly guys.
Yeah, you're going to need one of these guys to step up, and that's where, like, I kind of already harped on is, yeah, I want to give him another outing or two. Because this solely could just be a matchup situation with the Brewers. Like, the Brewers, nobody really, if you would have told me 2 weeks ago that the Milwaukee Brewers started the season 4-0, I would have been a little shocked, you know? So, their first loss of the year comes on their fifth game to the Twins. And I would have expected that the Twins probably steamroll them, and they weren't as competitive this year. So this could just be a little bit of a surprising early season. We're going after that. We're the underdog. Nobody believes in us type of mentality. So I'll give them a little more leeway here for this early matchup with the Brewers. But down the road, you need one of these guys to step up, whether it's an Ober, whether it's Varland, whether it's Paddock. I think out of those three, I'd probably put my bet, if I was a betting guy, on Chris Paddock to maybe be a little more reliable. And I don't think he's going to be your surefire. He rises to the top, the creme de la creme of whatever, but he's going to be a very solid, like, option as soon as you get past Joe Ryan or you get past a Lopez, because he's been around, he's kind of got that repertoire. And I feel like when it comes down to it mentally, he might be set up a little bit better in the long run for once you get into those deep summer months.
Yeah, and look, Bailey Ober, someone I think they probably believe in maybe the most because he had a career season, and Chris Paddock coming off his second Tommy John and really hasn't thrown a ton of innings over the last 3 years. But yeah, you can't just have these guys that are going limited amount of innings and taxing your bullpen too much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this will be fun. This will be fun to watch. I think it's a good talker. I know fans were obviously overreacting to a lot of different things in the first week of the season here.
Yes.
Twins coming back, obviously, for their first homestand. They'll have the Guardians, and looks like they'll probably avoid Shane Bieber. They mentioned this on the broadcast. He might pitch on Sunday. The Cleveland Guardians could elect to start him on Sunday, but they also could hold him out. So then that means the Guards could get him for their home opener a week from now. So that might be a good bullet to dodge. Now, Cleveland, they beat up on a really bad Oakland A's team, so you can't take a whole lot of stock in that. But their bats are alive, and that's a team that no one really thought would have much offense. It's a pitching factory. So I think the vibes, which is going to be a benchmark into a lot of other Twins extra innings episodes, I think the vibes going into that first series against Cleveland are good because of what happened today. If they had lost again, you know, 3-1 and just a couple sack flies, you know, I wouldn't say it's panic. It's just a sour start to the season when you compound it with your starting pitching maybe being a little iffy, your lineup not being able to drive runs, and of course, probably still the biggest buzzkill almost a week later now is Royce Lewis's injury. So I think going into Milwaukee, getting a big win, Jeffers getting a big knock there, makes life a little bit easier when you can settle back in on your first homestand tomorrow against Cleveland.
Yeah, and it definitely shakes off any big, maybe like looming cloud of, okay, we just We finally got that playoff win last year. We're the favorites to win the AL Central again. We should be able to do it despite maybe some rollbacks in the payroll. And, you know, we go out to Milwaukee in a border state and we lose that first one. No, you get the second one. Now you feel a little more relaxed. That flight home, it's a quick flight, but it's going to be loosey-goosey. There's going to be probably a couple card games going on in the back of the plane. They're going to get off and they're going to go home. And then when they show up to Target Field tomorrow, it's going to be, like you said, the vibes are probably going to be just fine. It's that opening day atmosphere. It's not as warm as maybe some Minnesotans would like who are going to be at the ballpark. I know you included, but you know what? Why would we expect anything different? That's that home field advantage that Target Field is going to bring. And when it comes down to it, a win here rather than I think if you flip it, I'd rather have, if you're going to split, you get that win today going into the home opener tomorrow, big time, but just because now you lifted yourself up a little bit. It's not that pressure of we have to win this game, this first game at home. No, it's okay. We've got it. We've collected. We kind of know our identity. Let's get back to work tomorrow. And it comes down to, you don't win your division in the first month of the season, but you sure as heck can lose it. So now this is a good stepping stone. You got a nice little homestand here coming up. Start that series off with the Guardians by really taking it to, I believe it, who is it? Bibby?
Yeah.
Tanner Bibby.
Yeah. He gets the ball, and Pablo Lopez will be on the mound, the Twins ace.
Yeah.
Start them opener too, which will be big. Age, before we go here, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
no, put me on
you
the
and Ross went to Target Field on Monday, did the food tour. You had some hot takes that you shared with me, just one-on-one. Is that releasing to the Score North social channels today? Was that going to be releasing tomorrow morning on the home opener? I am very excited for the world to see AJ and Ross, and I'll be specific. AJ, review these food options at Target Field, because, man, there's some... AJ already has great hot takes, and I love talking shop with AJ on sports, life, whatever. He was as fired up as I have ever seen him on some certain food items at Target Field talking to him in the office yesterday.
Yeah, today was surprisingly busy. So yeah. I am like halfway done with the editing of this video. Okay. It'll be posted to socials. I'm anticipating literally tomorrow, the second I walk into the offices.
Okay,
so cool. It'll be there. Hopefully any Twins fans going out to Target Field for the opener tomorrow, they'll be able to see it before. And I'll tell you right now. Section 127 Union Hmong Kitchen. It's one of the first things we tried. It's a banh mi brat. If you like banh mi sandwiches, I already did. So this maybe is like a cheat, but it's a great take. That's one of the main things that I will harp on, was like, that was the top tier best thing that they displayed back on Monday at the Taste of the Twins, as they called it.
Taste of the Twins. Yeah. I'm excited for everyone to see that. I'm excited to try some new foods. I've worked in baseball before. I've worked with the St. Paul Saints. I've worked at Twins games for a long time. And I know I'm very lucky and privileged to say this, but I can eat ballpark food every single day of my life and completely be satisfied. And it wouldn't affect my health one bit. At least I'm telling myself it wouldn't affect my health one bit. So I'm very excited to try some new foods around Target Field this year. So it's going to be really, really exciting. This is Score North Extra Innings. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button. Both those things help us out, and give us a 5-star review too on Apple and Spotify. It helps kind of spread the word about the Extra Innings podcast. We'll have an Extra Innings episode tomorrow from Target Field. And again, Extra Innings gives people some framework here. If it's a day game like tomorrow, you can expect a Extra Innings episode right after the game or close to it after the game, after clubhouse access. If it's a night game, you know, a 6 or a 7 o'clock p.m. start, you can kind of expect something before the game. So if you're always kind of wondering, well, what is the schedule? That's kind of the framework of how I'll have these episodes lined up. You'll see AJ, you'll see Ross, who we just talked about. You'll still see the sports dad. You'll see Phil Mackey. You'll see some of our weekend producers too that help us out with that. So going to be an all hands on deck, a whole lineup. And hopefully we just drive in the runners with scoring positions. That's the end of the goal here. That's just drive in the runners with scoring position, get on base, knock them in. Let's get the podcast up. Let's get these YouTube views up. We appreciate you guys. So yeah, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate it. This is the Score North Extra Innings podcast. We'll talk to you after opening day tomorrow.